Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Focus podcast. I am Singing Lisa, your host, and of course, glad to have you with me as always as we continue meeting great people doing great things, especially in our city of New Orleans. And we, of course, continue to wish everyone great health and that everybody's continuing to do well during this COVID-19 process that we've been enduring for a number of months now. And so we continue to meet people who are a part of this journey of getting us all better and well and more knowledgeable about what is going to help us to progress toward and past, hopefully, COVID-19. I am very happy to be joined today by Dr. John Froh, Robert J. Jean Froh, MD. I love saying that because it's our French side in New Orleans. And so it's a pleasure to have him on board. He is in charge of Medformix, which he operates along with his wife, Andrea. And so we are really honored to have him come on board and find out all about him and what he is doing in the work and in the area of COVID-19. So Dr. Jean Froh, welcome to the Focus podcast. And I know that I have a little history about you, but I will definitely let you tell it so that everyone can learn about you and meet you.
Oh, well, thank you very much. So I'm the medical director for Medformix. We have a number of sites across the southern U.S. here in the metropolitan New Orleans area. So we've been doing clinical research for some time now, and I personally have been involved in research for about 14 years. My wife's been involved a lot longer than that. And we started our own company, I guess it was around 08. We were involved in a lot of vaccine studies prior to the advent of the pandemic. And so I'll give you a little background on how this kind of developed. And although the West Coast was first affected by this, the New Orleans area was affected pretty early. Yes. And so when it became obvious that we were going to have a problem, I got contacted by one of the doctors that works for the disaster preparedness for the state, because he knew that we did viral and vaccine research and that we knew how to do nasopharyngeal swabs. And that at that point, it was obvious that there was going to be some widespread testing and that the people that were manning these sites needed to be trained. And so he contacted me to do that. These drive-through centers were manned by National Guard medics. So I and some of my staff met with about 61, 62 National Guard medics. And we spent, you know, the better part of a morning training them on how to do the swabs. We trained each person individually. And then we also went over the putting on and removing the personal protective equipment, because that has to be done correctly as well. I have been in certified principal investigator. I'm also a board certified internist and have been in practice for 30 plus years, most of which was spent at a local community hospital, East Jefferson General Hospital. And so fairly early on, one of the physicians on staff became sick with this illness, and they contacted me asking, you know, if there was anything available, because everybody on staff knows I do clinical research. And in fact, I'd been getting a number of phone calls prior to that, wanting to know if there were any studies available that patients could be enrolled in. Back at that time, when it was fairly early, it takes some time to get clinical studies up and rolling. And at that time, there really wasn't much available. But when I was contacted about this physician who was actually desperately ill, I talked to the chief medical officer at the hospital, and he actually knew about the convalescent plasma trial, which was being headed up by the Mayo Clinic. And we got involved in that pretty early on. And I must say, the blood bank at East Jefferson was remarkable, because you had to get plasma from patients who had been infected and recovered. the idea being that their plasma contained useful antibodies that could help someone else. And so we actually made a couple of television appearances on several news stations, and the response was quite remarkable. Now, you were talking about how proud you are of our city. Well, I am too, because it was really astounding the number of people that came in. Poor people, rich people, people of every ethnic and racial group. It was really quite moving. So anyway, with that, we were able to establish a supply of plasma for patients who had recovered. And now this was made available. You had to be involved in this program through the Mayo Clinic, but we were. And so whenever an attending physician at the hospital had a patient that they thought would benefit, they would call us, and we would go over there and evaluate the patient. And if they were suitable for convalescent plasma, we would administer it. And in some cases, the response was quite remarkable. In the very first case, it was really dramatic. I would say. It's not all, you know, everybody responds differently. There's sort of a variation in how well people do. But I think. By virtue of the fact that the clinicians are still calling us, I think most of the clinicians feel that there's some benefit to this. Mm-hmm. Not a placebo-controlled study, and it's not randomized.
Yes.
I guess it's been about 2 months ago, studies started coming in that were ready to enroll. And we got involved in that fairly early, and we had this wonderful relationship with our clinicians at East Jefferson. And so we started enrolling patients in clinical studies. That's kind of it in a nutshell. That's how we got involved.
Yeah. Well, it is great because especially to hear you say that you got an overwhelming response. Was this through each person that came in? Was it by their own will or through invitation? How did they come?
Most of the people, with a number of physicians and nurses came in because then they knew about it firsthand. And then when we went on the news, that really exploded it. Oh, yeah. We got calls from all over the place. And that's really what did it. And, mm-hmm. and it was really quite an astounding thing to witness.
Wow. Well, yes, this entire process of COVID-19 has been astounding because no one has been a part of a pandemic since they mentioned that it's been 100 years ago. And of course, even if they had, the technology is really what stands out to make the difference night and day to how things were managed from then to now. And so right. to have the technology that you have to do what you need to do has to be such a huge advantage.
Yeah. I would like to say that the masks are critical. People really need to wear the masks. And as our restrictions are lifted and we become more more mobile and able to do things, I think a number of people misinterpret that as meaning the all clear sign has been given.
Yes, I'm so glad you said that.
That is absolutely not the case. Mm-hmm. And it only actually, we should be even more vigilant about using the mask. I'll tell you why I really believe in the mask. We were approached by a sponsor several weeks ago to do a study in people who are at high risk for contracting the disease. And that was primarily healthcare workers. Mm-hmm. About 2 weeks later, they called me and said, look, we're going to cancel the study. I said, why is that? He said, well, because, and we think this is what's happening, because healthcare workers have been so vigilant in using the masks, none of the healthcare workers are getting sick. It's been a dramatic decrease in the risk. Early on, you know, when we didn't really know what we were dealing with, people were a little cavalier about their personal behavior.
Yes.
But now, now that we know that these masks really work, people are, healthcare workers in particular, are very careful about using them. And so they still get infected, but it's not nearly like it was, or, you know, initially.
Yeah, so absolutely. I'm really glad you said that, because, of course, that is the topic that continues to be discussed because of the ways that many doctors and others are trying to curve the speed and the progress at which COVID seems to spread unknowingly until they have, you know, obviously visible symptoms. And so that mask seems to be very critical in the process. And so many have different viewpoints, especially when it comes to how to wear it, you know, how often, when, where, and really the importance of the type of mask, because I think that we've seen an uptick not only on some COVID cases, but the entrepreneurial side of it and the creativity has just gone through the roof, because we see all types of styles, which really just lends back to the creativity and the spirit of a person and what they can do to make things work and to make the best of it overall. Mm-hmm. And so when you have people really looking at that, and that was a thought that I had, because speaking to several people who had been infected, they were very upset in the beginning when they would initially go to the hospital and then be rejected from being, you know, checked in because they didn't have severe symptoms. And so the lack of understanding about why that happened really concerned a lot of people and made them very, very fearful in a way, because they thought the hospital was where I needed to be to recover and to get better. But learning about the process, that actually was the opposite.
Yeah. And so from a clinical research standpoint, the first studies that started coming around were for people who were critically ill. And so those were the studies we focused on. And you know, if you think back to when this pandemic started, no one, and I'm not talking about locally, but I'm talking about worldwide, no one knew what to do.
I mean,
we didn't have medicines.
Yes.
It was a strange disease. We still don't understand it very well, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So no one really knew what to do. And we didn't, and we didn't have, you know, our armamentarium was very, very limited. So when people would show up in the hospital initially, it was mainly a matter of supporting them. I mean, we didn't have much to treat them with. So if somebody came in who was in severe respiratory distress, they would get admitted and would be on a vent. And at one time, our little local hospital had 30-plus people on a vent. Yes. So if someone came in with relatively early symptoms, and there was a whole, you know, I won't get into it, but there was a whole question of hydroxychloroquine. But if someone came into the emergency room who just tested positive and was otherwise, you know, not severely affected, there wasn't really much to do. I mean, you put them in the hospital, but if they didn't need oxygen, I mean, you know, and from a patient standpoint, I could see how they might feel that they were being dismissed. But from our standpoint, we really didn't have anything.
And we, right. And so, and that's really what it was. It was just the knowledge was not there. The experience wasn't present to give a definite answer or procedure on how to manage what was happening so very rapidly in many, right. many people at the same time. And so it was just sort of everyone learning at the same time in their area of discipline or just in the area of care for themselves or someone else. And so as you have progressed through this, what has been amazing to me has been the fact that our heroes, which we definitely rightfully call everyone on the front line, they jumped in and maintained their oath and continued to take care of life. And we know now that there has been such a mental attack on the mind of our healthcare workers and everyone really who is trying to grab an understanding of what is going on. And thankfully, it's not still rapidly progressing, but it has had an effect on people's mindset, on the fact that they're not able to save everyone. They're not able to really give the answers that they would want to normally be able to do.
You are so right.
So we continue to heal with those that have been affected. We continue to mourn with many who have just suddenly gone away and died, because we know the complications have varied. And I think the process of learning has shown that underlying issues seem to have always contributed in most cases to someone's success or lack thereof of really surviving the symptoms that they may have had from this.
Comorbidities like diabetes and chronic health problems do increase the risk of a poorer prognosis.
Mm-hmm. And I think at the top of the list, I've heard many doctors tell people, if you're smoking, please stop, because that number one.
Yep.
So one thing we want to mention as well, that you have not only been a part of the research study, but you yourself are a survivor. And is that something you're willing to discuss?
Yep. Do you want to hear about that?
You know, anybody that survives, you deserve airtime so that everybody can just hear another plus sign in that area.
Well, some time back, I started feeling very, very fatigued. And as you pointed out earlier, we've been quite busy, and I just kind of wrote it off to overwork. But I did have one of my staff do a nasopharyngeal swab. We actually can do testing at my research site. So I tested myself, and it was negative. So I said, well, I guess, but I was sleeping close to 14 hours a day.
Wow.
And so this went on, and I had no other symptoms, just incredible fatigue. And after 10 days of that, I said, you know what? Either I got leukemia or something. Something's not right. So the first thing I did was to retest. And when I retested, I was positive. And at this point, some of it gets a little hazy in my head, because I started having some pulmonary symptoms. I got a little short of breath. And I got a chest film that showed some bilateral infiltrates, but it showed a pneumonia. And so I went to the emergency room, and I was a little hypoxic, and did get admitted to the ICU for a couple of days, and got convalescent plasma as part of the regimen. I got some other medicines as well. Thankfully, I made an uneventful recovery, and I was looking at some of my lab values, and they were abnormal, but not nearly as bad as some of the patients I've been treating. Mm-hmm. I was thinking to myself, my God, if I feel this bad and relatively not that sick, these poor souls, they must feel awful.
Yeah,
because these seemed to be a whole lot sicker than I was. And it's absolutely nothing I want to go through again.
Yeah.
It was not pleasant at all.
Well, I know that I've heard that very statement from everyone who has had any type of exposure to it, because it's just so unpleasant and shocking, and nothing like you've ever experienced before, probably on any level. Just amazing. Well, and you know, what's important about your experience is that it's different for everyone. That's why every story is unique. It's literally like going through Katrina. Everyone had their own individual experience, and each one was different and unique to the person, because it just was different for everyone. And so every story really is important, because I think you lean toward what other area was discovered was people who were asymptomatic, who we still today don't know who they are unless they're identified, because they're another threat to the people who might be more susceptible to getting it.
You are absolutely right.
So you were in that crossing category.
Yeah. And, you know, I think I know what happened. We had just extubated a patient who had been on a vent for a while. And we were like joyous that we were able to get this individual off. And when we took the tube out, his voice was very weak, and he was trying to tell me something. And in a moment of lapse of concentration, I bent down next to him to try to hear him better. And I had my ear right by his mouth, and he coughed. And when he coughed, I felt it go right under my mask.
Oh.
And right at that moment when he coughed, I also inhaled.
Oh.
And I said,
did you immediately?
No, I wasn't really thinking. I was just trying to tell me something, and I just bent down. But anyway, those things.
You said something that is so natural to New Orleans, to people, really. We are connecting. We're connected by feelings. We're connected by touch. We're a very southern area that is full of hospitality, and people know us for that. So, you know, in a way, we would be one state or one area to get it because of the contact factor. We just are naturally touchy-feely people. We want to know how you're feeling. And your care and concern was absolutely a natural reaction, because here you are helping somebody get relief, and they're experiencing some freedom because they haven't been able to speak. And so all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, what did you say?
Right. And we were like, you know, it is so stressful to see someone who can't breathe and they're struggling for each breath. It, like you were talking about earlier, the mental toll on nurses and doctors. You know, I don't. For me, I will never ever become accustomed or somehow. You know, you don't. That's something you don't get used to. I mean, seeing someone suffer is not something you can just say, oh, this has been a nurse for 30 years. She's used to that. I don't think that ever happens.
Right. And I think that if it does, it probably is a sign of a type of mental breakdown or something that has separated from the ability to have that compassion. And it might be, a safety factor, because it was happening so quickly from what I've learned that there was not even a time for a doctor or a nurse to help someone else who was next to the person they were trying to help, because things were happening so quickly. So because of that, it was just unbelievable and something out of anyone's control.
Right. And you know, family members couldn't come up to try to...
Yeah.
Aid them or give them some sort of comfort. They were all alone. You know, it was just a terrible situation. It still is.
Yes. The isolation and this is a journey of one almost without family, without friends, and really the nurses taking on another role and doctors becoming that connection to compassion. For people to really feel like they were not alone and that they would make it and that the best was being done for them. And so, yeah, absolutely. It has called on every aspect of not only your professional experience, but just your personal, character to help someone really believe that this is something that they can make it through. And so let me ask you, as you talked earlier about some of the trials and things that you had to do, I think the test that I've learned, you have a quick test that can happen. Do you just do one type of testing, or are you a part also of the quicker testing that's available?
At our site, we have a device from Cepheid. And the longest it will take to get a report is 45 minutes.
Wow.
Sometimes the results are a lot quicker than that. And, you know, if we can take a minute, I'd like to talk about the MP swabs and what that actually means.
Yeah, wanted to do that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So to do an MP swab, what it's detecting is genetic pieces of the virus. So if you get let's say somebody gets sick, like me, for instance, and let's say I was to get repeated if I had the repeat NP swab today, it could very well be positive. Sometimes these swabs remain positive for weeks and weeks. That does not mean the person is infectious. It's particles. It's sort of like if you're on a battlefield and there's bombs exploding and weapons being discharged. If you were to traverse that field, you would find an arm here, a leg there. And that's sort of what the test is detecting. None of those things are viable. So a positive swab is not the same thing as being infectious. Now, early on, it certainly could be, but the typical course is if you follow someone who gets the infection, as they get better, as their immune system kicks in, and we're going to assume this is a normal person with a normal immune system, as their antibody levels start to rise, the virus is no longer viable. So now that's in someone with a normal immune system who has a normal immune response. And you got to take that, you got to understand the full range of the disease. As you suggested earlier, there are people who are asymptomatic. So there'll be a period before their body starts producing antibodies where they'll have active virus and not know it. That's why everyone has to wear the mask. Because you just have to, you wear the mask for two reasons. One, you're protecting yourself, and two, you're protecting other people. So if you have someone who's asymptomatic, you know, you don't want to infect grandpa, who's probably not going to do real well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I'm glad you said that, because that has been still an area that is not understood, and I think just because the first thing everybody heard was get tested. And then when it wasn't even available, and then it was the longest wait ever, all you knew about was testing. But then I've spoken to several people who have had tests, and I learned something interesting from one person who said that looking at the numbers on the news and how it would increase and look like such a large jump actually would involve maybe one person who had been tested several times. So they right. may have had a negative test, and then they had to be retested for safety and to find out why they were having symptoms. And then the test would come back positive. And so, like you're saying, there's a period where something active is happening, but we're not all thinking scientifically like that, or, you know, through the process. And so people are thinking, well, why am I sick? Or, you know, where's the answer?
Yeah, and if we get a suitable vaccine, an effective vaccine, then you know, hopefully we can move out of this terrible period that we've all lived through and kind of get back to normal.
Yes.
Well, I do appreciate the chance of having been able to say that our site can perform testing for people that are interested.
Yes, I did want to mention that, because you are looking for others who may need to find a place. Let me ask also about the test. And when people are, you know, there have been a lot of even funny videos made of people self-testing. I think the lines have been so long where they've even been, are they being given kits to do it themselves? Right. Is there a way for that to happen?
We don't do that at our site. So a nasopharyngeal swab is where you insert the swab all the way back. And I don't think that's been being routinely recommended. Which for self-testing, I think they're just doing a nasal swab, which is in the very front part of your nose. Okay. And that's a lot easier to do. Potentially, you know, you could cause some damage if you try to do an NP swab and you're not really sure what you're doing. So, but nasal swabs can be done. And I'm not sure the issue's been satisfactorily settled, but in my mind, there's some question as to how well those swabs capture viral material. Some people mistakenly, because if you have URI symptoms and you're producing mucus, some people mistakenly think it's the mucus that you're trying to swab, okay. Which is not. It's not. In fact, when someone comes into our site and they're producing a lot of mucus, we have them try to clear their head as much as possible, because all viruses are intracellular parasites. So when we do the swab, we're actually trying to get cells off the mucosa. That's why it's uncomfortable. Put the swab in and you rotate it around, and it's basically scraping cells off the mucosa. It's not the most pleasant experience. It's not something you would do just for the fun of it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but it's not pleasant. So anyway.
Okay. And you mentioned not knowing much about it in the beginning. So when you were contacted because of the testing that you already have provided in throughout the years, how did you know what to look for when it came to, was it because it is a virus and you know that that's the certain process that you look for to identify?
So early on, when we were contacted by this doctor with the state, the process of doing, we do NP swabs. Let's say if you want to see, let's say we have a vaccine for respiratory syncytial virus. That's a virus that it causes upper respiratory tract infections, and it's not dissimilar to the flu. So, or you could take the flu, for example. So if you got a vaccine and you want to see how well it's working, you administer the vaccine and then you watch these individuals. If they come in with symptoms of an upper respiratory tract infection, you want to know if it's due to what you vaccinated the patient against. Because most of these studies have a placebo. So, but anyway, so you give the shot, you give the vaccine. If they get RSV, then they in fact got the active ingredient, then it didn't work that well. So, and the way we determine that is by doing the swabs, and we do viral cultures. So, we didn't do PCR testing. Well, it depends on the study, but for most of those, you actually do viral cultures, and that has to be sent off to a special lab.
Okay. So it's definitely all in the chemicals, trying to really determine where everybody is in the recovery process. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, it's been wonderful really learning all of these areas that you really specialize in. And so what was a typical work day or work week for you before the pandemic started?
It was a heck of a lot easier than it is now. So back then, as a medical director for this company, I would oversee trials. We get lots of phone calls about doing studies. So one of the main things I do is the sponsors or the pharmaceutical company sends me information about the trial, and I decide if we want to do it. And it's sort of an involved process, and it takes some time. And then I also assist in training employees, because there's a big, big learning curve with this, and each study involves new information. So it's a constant learning process. It's not like you can learn, because this is research. I mean, we're learning new stuff constantly. Yeah. And so everybody has to be brought up to speed on the new things that are being discovered. Mm-hmm. So a big part of my job is educational, in addition to watching the studies.
And so as you have, had these changes, were there changes that you had to activate or enact in your day-to-day operation when it came to COVID because of the exposure?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. So it sort of self-regulated itself. When we had some other studies going on, and when this pandemic struck, most of those studies actually got put on hold, because there was concerns about subjects coming to the research site and there being potentially COVID-infected patients. So it did sort of self-regulate itself. A lot of the studies that Now that things are sort of settling out, some of those studies are starting back.
I mean, I would imagine there would be concern about contamination or cross-contamination
You have to be, we have certain sites, certain areas. So we're very careful about observing good, safe behavior.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, just a necessary, and the reason I ask this because you do already have those practices in place. And as I've spoken to many doctors and other facilities, nursing homes, every place that has had to make changes because of the impact that this virus has and the way that it comes in, unseen. So you have to really change your cleaning practices just to be sure that you're practicing at the optimum level. So I'm always, curious what changes had to be made for you, and were there changes that you are going to have to continue, or was an improvement on what you do?
Boy, that's another good question. I think this pandemic is going to result in a lot of changes. For example, one change is, whenever we had a new study start, all these doctors would fly to a different city, would all congregate in one building or one big room, and they would go through the study. Now it's all being conducted much like we're doing now. Mm-hmm. And it probably won't go back to the old way. And unfortunately, this, can we say some other virus is not going to come along? In a way, this has been a learning experience for a lot of people, and God forbid, but if we should get another pandemic, I think people will be, although it may be a totally different virus and totally different treatment, much of what we've learned will be usable. And I think people will have a much better idea, particularly in terms of things that the general public needs to do to try to keep everyone safe. So there are some, this has been a terrible experience. What would be worse is if we didn't learn from it, in case this should happen again.
Absolutely. I agree. So now, as you go forward and the persons who are going to be calling you to get tested, I think that what's interesting is that before the vaccine, is the plasma treatment still going to be a part of a necessity, even with a vaccine?
Yeah. I think, we will be administering vaccine through our site in about 2.5 weeks. We have investigational vaccine, so we will be able to provide that. But it's going to be a process. There are people in the community who are currently infected. Vaccine's not going to help them. The vaccine is really for people who are uninfected. Okay. So there's the unanswered question of, should people who have been infected, should they receive a vaccine? There's a lot we really don't know, but. The main target is going to be people who have been uninfected who will get the vaccine, bearing in mind that there are still currently people who are infected. And as you said, there's this asymptomatic group, which could very well keep this thing rolling for a while. So it's not going to be an abrupt stop. But to answer your initial question, yes, we still use convalescent plasma. It's only administered in the hospital setting. It's not done in outpatients. So it's reserved for people who are a little bit sick, who are quite a bit sicker than someone early in the course of the disease.
And so that would be a treatment after the medications that have been acceptable are not working.
What's typically, and our infectious disease doctors at East Jefferson have done a remarkable job trying to develop a protocol as to how this is approached, and we have that. But typically what happens is, I think for people who are ill, remdesivir, which is an antiviral, is typically ordered. And this is the way we do it at East Jefferson. It varies from institution to institution. But many people get remdesivir. People also get dexamethasone, which is a corticosteroid. And we also administer Lovenox, which is a type of heparin. There's some issues there that we didn't even touch on. And then the convalescent plasma, and sometimes antibacterials may be administered, but that we do have sort of a standard cocktail that we use in the sicker.
Okay. Yes, I've heard the cocktail before because of the fact that these certain medicines work better in combination. So it does make a difference with some people and how it works. And so, yeah, that's really interesting because we still have. So if you're going to be getting a vaccine, then ultimately you have to be tested.
Right. So that's right. So because, as you said, there are asymptomatic people. And so one of the ways you tell that a vaccine is working is not only do you do, if you give the vaccine, if they present with an infection, that's one way you tell. You, if they get an infection, then it didn't work. Mm-hmm. The other way we tell how well a vaccine is working is we measure the antibodies. So vaccines, what they do is a vaccine contains a bit of the foreign agent that's attacking. So your body recognizes the vaccine as being foreign, so it makes antibodies to it, which are proteins that bind that piece of the virus and inactivate it. So when you do come into contact with the actual virus, those antibodies will recognize that part of the virus, bind it, and inactivate it. One of the ways we tell how well vaccines work is we actually measure those antibody levels and why some vaccines elicit better antibody responses than others. There's a whole list of reasons why that might happen, but part of what we do is we measure the antibody levels. So if someone was previously infected, they've already developed antibodies from the initial infection. So it makes it difficult to interpret those results.
Mm. Yeah, and then that lends the other question to, can someone get reinfected?
Right, a big, big question. There's some initial concerns that can happen in reinfection. So one of the questions is, how long does the antibody response last? So if the antibody is only there for a short period, then presumably this is kind of an oversimplification of our immune system. Our immune system is incredibly complex. Mm-hmm. But if the antibodies don't last long enough, then obviously you could be unprotected. The other issue that comes up is, for example, in the case of influenza, where the virus frequently is mutating, what starts out as one virus basically mutates to the point where it's a different influenza virus. I mean, that's why we have yearly influenza vaccines, because the virus can mutate so readily. It doesn't appear that that's a major problem with this virus, although it does appear that it can change over time, although it doesn't look like that's a major factor. The bigger question is, how long do the antibodies have?
Yeah, and so can we help ourselves by living a healthier lifestyle?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, like you already mentioned, the cigarettes, taking care of diabetes, taking care of all those health problems, can certainly lessen the severity of the disease.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, you have a tremendous responsibility that I think you have embraced throughout the years. Was there something early on in your life that drew you to research, and this was something that has become your passion?
I'll give you my honest answer. It's it's fun. I know it doesn't sound like fun, but it's fun to be involved in new things, and we have many really bright people in this country, and they are doing just amazing work. And it's right now is not fun because there's so much suffering.
Sure.
It is a great privilege to be involved in some of this just
the research
work.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I think, like Dr. Akula mentioned, it's something that anyone would ever think that they would experience in their career. So to be a part of really life-changing practices and answers and help and resources for people has to just be such a bonus, just an added wonder. Because, like you said, every day something new is happening. So we're surrounded with our own bacteria and chemicals that keep life balanced for us. And so here you are trying to bring balance back to mankind. And have you ever been a part of where the entire world full of doctors was studying the same thing?
Right. It's an amazing experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
it really is amazing. And it's worldwide. I've spoken with people from all over the world about this. It's an amazing experience.
Yeah. I think it's probably the biggest research effort, you know, when you think worldwide, that everyone in their own language, in their own practice, in their own, capacity is contributing to improving and learning and solving this mystery together. So it literally brings mankind together in a way that maybe hasn't been seen before or hasn't been thought of before, because it's taking the effort, I believe, of what knowledge is existing everywhere to try to come up with the best solution. So everyone is, you know, fighting to be the one to have that right vaccine. And it may be another cocktail situation where one country's answer works best with what we have.
You know, I think that's really important. I think it's a tough lesson, but it's an important lesson to realize we're all brothers. We're all in the same boat.
Yes, absolutely. Well, my last question for you as we come to a close is, so what do you see and what is your optimistic opinion about where we're headed with all that has been done, has been learned for our future? Because here in New Orleans, you know, we're the people that are always together. People are trying to figure out how to have Mardi Gras, how to have more music experiences, how to get back together so that we can enjoy all of the wonderful offerings that we have. What's your take on that?
I think a lot's going to hinge on how well these study vaccines work. If they work well, and you know, it's going to take a little while to determine how well they work. But I think within 7 or 8 months, we should have a much clearer idea of, you know, is this going to be a yearly thing? I mean, there's all kinds of questions that come up. Mm-hmm. I think if the vaccines work well, that is our best hope.
Yes.
I know that vaccines are a controversial area, but particularly in this case, I think vaccines are really the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And if they work well, then we're much closer to getting back to normal.
And in your area of work, you get more answers the more people that participate in your study?
Oh, yeah.
So yeah. We'll definitely provide information for everyone to be able to contact your agency and yourself so that they can take part in coming up with more answers.
That would be terrific.
Well, we appreciate you and everyone again. Dr. Robert J. Jeanfreau has done a great work and continues to do so in the area of research. Thank you for enjoying what you do, which means that you're going to give your best and be passionate about it. So again, thank you so much.
Thanks for chatting with me.